Hey, North Langley, welcome to our podcast after Sunday. My name is Corey, and I'm sitting here with our lead pastor, Matthew Price. It has been a minute since we've done this.
Months.
Months and months. Yeah, for sure. Matthew, it's, why has it been so long?
Well, we haven't been doing anything super controversial. I think the last time we did this was the leading together.
Mm-hmm.
I think. And maybe we did some after that, but...
We might have. Yeah. Leading together, which is the whole, where we
women
took
a
big step. And we have women as elders now. We have one of our women.
Marian
Sinan is one of our elders, which is so awesome. And I know we have, there's another person that is in the future. I know that we've been interviewing and stuff. So, so cool. So exciting. And now we are in a bit more of a, a bit of a strange series, or at least I don't feel like we have been in a series like this. Like, I've been here 18 years. Have we done this before? Like a spiritual warfare?
You know, Tanya said the same thing to me the other day, and she was like, we rarely talk about this.
Yeah, I don't know if we, I don't remember if we, I mean, I'm sure it comes up, but I don't know if we've done a series on spiritual warfare.
Right, well, because in Luke, there's been multiple times where there have been like Jesus freeing demonic forces.
Yes.
So it's been in the Gospel of Luke as we've journeyed through Luke.
Right, yeah, but of course.
And maybe it just feels different because it's like focusing 7 weeks on it.
Yeah. It's gonna be a ride. We had our first Sunday sermon this last Sunday.
Yes. But before we go into that, Corey.
Yes, Matthew.
Tell everyone how your summer was.
Oh, you know, it was a good summer. So we, it's so funny how you're like, you always feel like you have to like explain, here's why we didn't do a big trip, you know, because you talk to someone, it's like, we went to this place and that place. We did, Sherry and I had a great week at, we were not Souk, we were.
By the way, you don't need to go anywhere in the summer.
No, this, totally.
This British is like, Columbia is the best place
really
to be.
It really is. It's the best place to be.
All of us who leave it, doesn't make any sense.
No, you're totally right. I know, it's true. Sherry and I did, so we went to Main Island this summer for a week, which was really, we had a friend who has a place there, so we stayed there. That was really awesome. Other than that, it was a really kind of chill summer. Like, as you know, our son Max is getting married in a month, a month from yesterday. So there's, you know, there's been prep and stuff for that. We had a great summer. It was just very laid back, and I'm trying to think what else we did. I don't remember anything super exciting, but that's okay. It was
Did
nice.
You record any music on
I recorded
Main
lots
Island?
Of music. No, not on Main. I didn't. I did that last time we went to the same place and I did some recording then, but I did a lot of recording this summer for sure. I do that often on my days off from North Langley, which is on Fridays. So that's
and
been
do
fun.
A shameless promo because yesterday I was trying to learn from Corey the names of all of his channels because he's got I didn't even know he had multiple channels, but I have found you as Allstad on Spotify.
Yep, that's right, Spotify. Yeah, so it's all quiet instrumental neoclassical, usually piano driven music. So it's awesome. If you're interested in that, it's great for like if you're reading or if you're just having a quiet evening. It's kind of that background. It's not only background music. I'm always like it's not Muzak, you know, like in the elevator music. It's not that.
What's the difference?
It's like classical music. It's kind of like classical music. And to be honest, a lot of it is stuff that you would actually find in your favorite dramatic TV show or something, you know, but maybe in the quieter moments, you know, it's not usually super dramatic, but it's quite cinematic often. I first stumbled upon, like, I've done this kind of music all my life. I just didn't know that I was allowed to record it and release it until I watched that show Broadchurch.
Yes.
I think I may have told the story. So while we watched Broadchurch, which is one of the best, I think it's one of the best
TV shows.
Yeah, TV shows ever.
Yeah.
That first season is so good. It's
so
tragic,
good.
But so good. But it's beautifully filmed and the music is gorgeous. And it's by a guy whose name is Oliver Arnolds, who's one of my favorite composers. And I went and I kind of did a deep dive on Oliver Arnolds and listened to his music. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like I've been.
Is there an F in there? Is there a V in there?
Oliver, it's an F. Yep, Oliver. So it's not Oliver, it's Oliver.
Okay.
He's from Iceland. Oliver Arnolds, and he writes this music, and I listen to it, and I'm like, this is the kind of music that I've been, like, that I love to play, and so that started me on this journey. So anyways, I do have a number of monikers or artist names that I release music under. Allstad is my biggest moniker. Henri Bentley, which I named after two of my favorite authors, Henri Nouwen and David Bentley Hart. So Henri Bentley
is one
is
of your
artist.
Favorite dogs.
Billy, what, huh? Oh, Henry. Yeah. The non-French version of Henri. Henry's with the Lord now. He passed away a number of years ago, but yes.
placeholder for future podcasts. Our dogs.
Yeah, the lion to and the lamb will, you know, they'll be together. Yeah, so for sure. Anyways, just kidding. And then I have, Clerico is a more of a cinematic kind of chill vibe. Floodplain is a me and my friend Jacob Moon. It's piano and guitar. I've got a Billy Ivory, which actually is named after my dog Billy. And then Ivory Keys, although we don't make Ivory Keys anymore because that is cruel, you know.
Right.
Yeah. So anyways, Billy Ivory is another artist.
Will those elephants be in heaven?
But yeah, I think so. I think God will, he will redeem the elephants as well. anyways, okay. Restore. Huh? Redeem? Yeah. Whatever. So sorry, that was way more than you really needed there.
No, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Because I feel like we all know you're working on things.
Yeah, yeah.
But I assumed it was all going on the Allstead channel.
No,
on Spotify, but it's not.
That's right. A lot of it is going elsewhere. So it's been a real joy. I love doing it. So
it's awesome.
It's been great. Yep, did a lot of that. How about you, Matthew? What did you do this summer?
Well, we left British Columbia.
Oh, see?
You know? Mm-hmm. No. so yeah, just basically like we have found that in a good way, in a positive way, we're getting our children to know their grandparents.
It's good.
And their cousins.
Yeah.
So we usually travel. So we spent 2 weeks. We use up most of our vacation time for 2 weeks with Oklahoma family in the summer. And then actually Tanya and the kids are in Alberta for like 3 weeks or something. But I come back for a week and work.
Gotcha.
But I'm there for about, 2 weeks or a little less than 2 weeks there.
Nice.
And we actually for the first time this summer, we did here in BC go to Camp Barnabas. It's a family camp.
Oh, yeah.
And that was great. They get you to do like devotions as a family together.
Hmm.
And then you like they have water sports. Our kids loved it. You know, they were like skiing on the back of the boat and swimming.
So fun.
It was a lot of fun. And there were actually multiple families from our church there. And it was great. Food's so beautiful.
Great.
It's on Thetis.
Thetis Island. Yeah. Is it Keats Island? Yeah.
Keats Island.
That's right. Yeah. We've been there. We used to sometimes they used to have the pastor and spouse retreat there.
Yes.
Yeah, which we used to go to. That sounds like an awesome
Which is where vacation. I found out you're a king at ping pong. Oh, to all of our listeners, Corey kills at ping pong.
I'm decent at it, but man, I'm telling you, there are some good players here in the North Langley community. Phil Southam, very good player. Isaac Allstead, very good player. Max
you just
Allstead.
Said Southam.
Southam.
I what? Say Southam.
No, it's Southam. Actually,
oh,
it's probably Southam. Is it Southam? I don't know. Phil, Wendy?
Phil and Wendy Southam.
Oh, I never, Southam. How is it Southam?
Oh, great.
Okay, sorry, guys.
Okay, Wendy. Wendy needs to clear it up
Phil,
for us.
You can help me out here. anyways, he's a great ping pong player. Phil is one of our sound guys. Wendy, of course, is on our team. She is a singer and plays percussion and, has helped out tons with administration and stuff. So, vacation. How many weeks vacation do you get a year? What? Okay, just kidding. You don't have to say.
I get the same amount you do.
I know you do. Yeah.
Yeah, 5 weeks.
5 weeks, yeah. See, that wasn't so bad. Why was that a big...
I don't know. Are we just talking about vacation weeks on a podcast?
Okay. Okay, sorry. Yeah, we should get into this. Oh, real quick. Sorry, Matthew. What book are you reading right now? Where are you?
What book am I reading? I feel like I always have three or four that I'm reading.
Yeah, that's good.
So, unfortunately... Well, fortunately... You got me back on the Flannery O'Connor kick because last summer I took a Flannery O'Connor course. Last year I was reading a lot of Flannery.
Right.
And then I was reading other things until you sent me a video of Ethan Hawke and his daughter making a new Flannery movie.
Yes.
So the last couple of weekends when I've had a chance to read, I read some more Flannery short stories.
So cool.
And it's cool. Actually, they don't get old. Like I read it's nice. I can read a short story in like 30 minutes.
Yeah.
30 or 40 minutes.
Yeah.
And then, followed by or around a nap.
Yes, I know. That's exactly.
Somebody the other day asked me what my hobbies were. And I was like, ooh, okay. Well, I have three children and I like to read and I like naps. So
and good food.
Anyway, I always feel like I don't have great hobbies, but. Anyway, so I've been reading Flannery. Mm. Yeah. You?
So cool. Right now, I usually have a book, although I have not been as good at reading these days. I've just been lazy, and so I need to get better at it. But anyways, I've been reading a book called Tom Lake by Ann Patchett. She's a great author. She is super fun. Really, she's a good author, but always like you're in immediately. It's a great dramatic novel. It's it's really good. And then I'm reading what's it called? The Calvin Ray gave you and me a book. What's it called? Something about the Adam.
I've been reading that.
Something about Adam and
Yeah.
So I forget what it's called. But anyways, that's been a really good one too.
You just broke Calvin's heart.
Well, yeah.
By not remembering the title. Calvin,
so excited. It's actually very, I really have been enjoying it. It's a good book. Yeah, really good. Sorry, I can't remember what it, The Undoing of Adam or something?
Undoing of Adam. The Undoing about of Adam. The cross and...
Something
about the Trinity.
That's right. And Garden of Eden, all that stuff. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Very cool. Okay, we should probably jump in.
Yeah. Okay. So we're starting the series and called Deliver Us: Life in the Victory of Jesus, and it's 7 weeks on spiritual battle that's real. Talking about the world, the flesh, and the devil. 7 weeks on experiencing the victory, the joy, the freedom, and hope of Jesus. And one of the verses that I wanted to just kind of anchor the series on is 1 John 3:8, which I mentioned on Sunday. So the reason the Son of God appeared was to destroy the devil's work. And so I was just going to, I did this on Sunday, but just I feel like it's important any series that you do on, let's say, or if you start talking about the devil or the demonic, is to recognize that we live in a skeptical age. Mm-hmm. And one of the phrases I really like by Dallas Willard, I'm paraphrasing him, but he's now passed away, but he was a philosopher, theologian. But he said, he asked the question, do you believe that Jesus is the smartest person who's ever lived? Mm-hmm. We call him Lord, we call him Savior, but do you believe he's the smartest, that when he looked at the world, that his view of the world or how he saw the world was the way the world truly was? And do you trust him with that? And I think most of us have a hard time, well, I'll just talk for myself. I don't often operate seeing the world the way Jesus did when it comes to darkness or evil.
Right.
Like, I'm kind of happily going about my life not thinking about it. It's really interesting because I have friends in Kenya who are doing the opposite. They're very aware of the spiritual battle. Mm. So I don't really know all the reasons why this happens. I had a friend of mine ask me, like, why do you think the enemy doesn't operate the same way here that he seems to operate in Africa or certain countries? And I don't have a great answer to that, but what I want to do is I want to just ultimately trust that the way Jesus saw the world is accurate, because we have placed our, to use a poker image, all of our chips on Jesus. Mm-hmm. We're going with Jesus. Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, then to kind of in a maybe, okay, these are my words, but like patronizing way, look down on him and be like, well, he lived 2,000 years ago in the Middle East. It's probably, that was probably just a thing then.
Right. Yeah.
And there's been some recent authors who've written books like that. It's funny, there was a book that I was going to pick for this series because this theologian, who I will not name their name, but was always trusted. I don't know. I don't want to slander him.
Hmm. Is it slandering? You just say you disagree with him? You don't have to say.
Well, I didn't even read the book.
Oh, okay.
I read a review of the book, and I was like, oh, this is where he's going? Oh, I don't trust it.
Okay. All right. If you don't want to say the name, that's okay.
Okay. Well, with the caveat that I haven't read the book.
Yes. Yeah.
So one of my favorite Old Testament commentators is John Walton.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right.
Who wrote a lot about like Genesis 1 and creation and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But he takes an angle on Satan and demons that is, it just feels like it misses the mark. Hmm. Like kind of like that's what they thought back then, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And a theologian I really trust named Mike Heiser kind of walked through the book and just like really just showed, you're an Old Testament scholar. It's wonderful. Yeah. You've contributed some amazing things. But when you're looking at this, you're actually throwing a lot of babies out with the bathwater, especially when it comes to Jesus.
Right.
And what do you think Jesus was doing that his entire life? Like, he was trying to just show the arguments John Walton was making in kind of demythologizing, is that right? Or just kind of, kind of saying, you know, dark spirits or whatever are probably an ancient person's way of talking about maybe things that...
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, if that, I understood the summary correctly. But here I am going into a book I haven't read.
Yeah, so, totally.
Anyway, but it's just, it's one of those things where I'm, you know, friends around the world who live in Africa, as I've traveled to Rwanda, Uganda, and Kenya, and then this last year to Benin. like I'm just very aware of like the spiritual battle is real mm-hmm. and the darkness is real. And we have friends who were missionaries in India, right? And the stories they told me of on mission in India mm-hmm. and the darkness that was yes. tangible. Yeah. And mm-hmm. and so then when you have like a biblical scholar like John Walton kind of deconstructing that mm-hmm. And then therefore really it's hard to read Jesus if that's all deconstructed. So then who is Jesus battling against? And right. when Paul talks about the powers and principalities, what's he talking about? And so anyway, it's discouraging mm-hmm. Yeah. when you encounter a book like that. But
yep,
anyway, totally. So just wanting to take Jesus seriously. That's my point.
Yeah, yeah. Gotcha.
Any thoughts on that?
No, totally. I feel like Tim Keller, we're just curious, you know where he would land on this? Because I feel like, didn't he have some beliefs about like sort of miracles? I know it's not the same thing, but miracles not happening. What do you call that? Cessationists or like not believing that miracles are a modern day or a contemporary thing. They were reserved for when Jesus was. Didn't he have that?
I didn't know he was a cessationist.
I could be Is wrong he? About that. I thought I had heard that about him, but that was quite a few years ago. So that
okay. may have
changed. So don't quote me on that. I could be wrong. But anyways, I'll leave that. I was just kind of curious as you said that. I was like, oh, I wonder where he stood on that. And he, of course, recently passed away as well.
Mm-hmm.
He was awesome. No, I think it's like, I think one little pushback, small pushback. I think when you say like, you know, we are cashing in our chips on Jesus. I think so many of us, if we're being honest, I think you and I have had this conversation. It's like, well, I mean, we're cashing in all of our chips, probably 80% of our chips. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. A lot of us are like, I am trusting. That's what faith is, right? It's like we don't have certainty all the time about things, but we are saying, no, it seems to me as though it's just the most, it makes the most sense. Jesus is, I believe that he is who he says he was.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that I know for a fact that he was who he says he was. You know what I mean? It's a different kind of statement. So when you say cash in all of our chips, I feel like it's not so much a patronizing of kind of thing to say, it's like, Jesus probably just, you know, he was just back then they didn't really understand. So they were saying, I think for a lot of people, it's more like, I don't know what to do with that. Because it's not my reality. Like I'm like, so I hear these stories and I see, and I'm like, oh, Jesus sending a demon, you know, or into these pigs, whatever, like this, you know, it's like, so I don't really know what to do with that. I'm not trying to be patronizing. I'm just not sure. I don't know because I don't see this, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I think I would say one of the things that I think we'll find as the series unfolds is the more specific ways in which we can actually see, I think, the way the enemy works, the more relevant to our life it'll become. Because if you're saying, I've never seen a demonic possession,
right?
So what is it? Well, that's like a really specific category.
Yeah, yeah.
I personally have only been in one moment in my life where there was a demonic presence that was trying to be cast out by a group of people I was with.
Yeah.
I was over in a different section praying, but like some people that I know were actually with this woman and trying to cast out a demon. So that's the closest I've been. But so that's not the bread and butter of everyday life. What I hope you'll find in the next few weeks is that it's really applicable once we realize we talk about lies, temptations, condemnation, accusation. Well, those are like every day.
Totally. Yeah.
So then it's like, oh, okay. Well, no, I'm now starting to go, oh, that's the way he traffics in lies. Okay. Well, then that's very applicable to my life.
Yeah. Yep. Totally. I appreciated that in the sermon because it's true. It's a good way of I think so many of us, like for me, when I grew up and I remember even in college, we had these group of friends that were, it probably happens often in Bible college and stuff. This group of friends were like, they were suddenly decided they were going to be vigilantes, conquering Satan and his, you know, so they were like, they would like pray all night and they'd be, you know, they'd have these, and it probably good impulses, you know, they were trying to do something good, but I remember everyone was just kind of like, you guys are just being really weird. Like they were like, oh yeah, we felt like there was, you know, there was like a demon over here. And I kind of like, well, I know you haven't that. I love that C.S. Lewis quote that you quoted, which maybe you'll share with us in a bit, but you know, that idea of they were clearly looking way too much for it. Like they were trying desperately to find it. And so I think so many of us feel like, you know, we just think, okay, a demonic presence automatically means, you know, whatever, we have this picture of like, you know, crazy, like, you know, out of this world events that are happening and
right.
You know, even a character that's dressed in red, you know, whatever, like all these things that, you know, and as opposed to, which I liked on Sunday, where you're saying, no, like, what about that feeling of giving into a temptation and suddenly feeling absolutely accused or condemned for it.
Yes.
That kind of, it's like, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Or even a sense of darkness where you're like, a sense of this is not, something is not right here. You know, those kinds of moments. So I like that. Yeah.
Cool. Well, next week actually is all about this. There's a guy named Jeremy Treat who wrote a book called Crucified King that Tim passed along to me. And his articulation of this is what I've kind of been thinking about for this next week. So more on that.
Cool.
Yeah, later.
Yeah. What's that C.S. Lewis? You're going to say
C.S. Lewis in the Screwtape Letters, which is just this kind of, it's actually kind of a funny book about a senior demon coaching his nephew, who's a junior demon.
I think it's his nephew.
I thought it was his nephew.
Wormwood, is he Wormwood, the senior demon? I always forget the names. Wormwood and Screwtape.
And Screwtape, yeah. So like, I think Wormwood is the nephew.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah, yeah. And Screwtape is the senior demon.
Yeah.
And so Lewis in that book, he just says this: there are two equal and opposite errors into which our race can fall about the devils. One is to disbelieve in their existence. The other is to believe and to feel an excessive and unhealthy interest in them. They themselves are equally pleased by both errors. Mm-hmm. I think that's been a really kind of key quote for lots of pastors I know and Christians, just to kind of go, okay, right. Like, we don't need to give them a lot of airtime. Mm-hmm. Let's not focus on them. We focus on Jesus, but also to like disbelieve in them and to kind of live our life as though we're kind of totally ignorant.
Right.
Is not wise either.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Okay, cool. Well, hey, so yeah, just want to just kind of emphasize this last week, we started off the series by talking about the victory of Jesus. We're on the cross. This is just a recap from Sunday, is that he was victorious over the darkness. We call that Christus Victor, the Latin for Christ our Victor, the victory of Christ. And on the cross, he says, it is finished, where he defeated the powers. I brought up Colossians 2, which says, having disarmed the powers and authorities, he made a public spectacle of them, triumphing over them by the cross. So really, the battle is done. Jesus is victorious, and the devil stands in a losing position. And on Sunday, this is the final recap thing, it's just what... I just wanted to give this image of how is it that Jesus won the war, but this battle still goes on. So why are we still in a battle if Jesus won the war?
Yes.
And the helpful image that's been really helpful to me is the checkmate image. And just that, like, when you put your opponent in checkmate, they could technically, although we don't play this way in chess, they could technically make one final move. And it would always be one of destruction or escape or something like that. And then you could actually capture the king fully.
Right, yeah.
And at the end of Revelation, we see the capturing of the king fully, right? Mm-hmm. The devil and his angels are thrown into this lake of fire. And that's the end, and end game. But right now we live in this already not yet where he's allowed this one move. And it's a destructive move. Mm-hmm. But the war's over. Like, there's no chance he could win.
Yeah.
People have used the D-Day image before. Have you heard that one?
You have to refresh my memory.
It's like on the shores of, you know, France, the Allied invasion took place. And it was like on, I think it was June 6, 1944. And on that day, the war was over. That Hitler was in a retreat mode all the way back to Berlin, and then he was destroyed.
Right.
I've never liked that image, actually. The Alpha Course uses that image, and I'm always like, wait, well, there was no way it was for sure, like, on D-Day. Like, D-Day was so incredible, right, because the Allies pierced the darkness, as it were.
Yeah.
But it was far from over, right? Like, I feel like Hitler could have still rallied.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yes,
like,
yeah.
And that's what,
and
I
even
feel
the
like,
image of retreat doesn't feel accurate.
Retreat doesn't feel accurate.
Yeah, it doesn't
no.
feel like the forces of darkness are retreating. You know, that
right.
doesn't, it's like, that feels presumptuous. Yeah.
In the Alpha Course, they call it the mop-up plan, quote unquote. The mop-up. It was just like the mop-up operation.
Okay.
I'm like, the mop-up operation? My grandpa fought in World War II. I'm like, it didn't feel like mop. Like, it's like at any point, right? Like, Germany could still kind of turn the corner and, you know, I don't know, rally. So for some reason, the chess one makes more sense. The game is legit over.
Yes. Like, yeah. It's like, there's no other way around this.
Yeah.
I like the N.T. Wright. Remember the N.T. Wright? He had that image of the, what was the it like? It was in some, he was in some village and somewhere far, far away in the jungle, you know, and he, or he's talking about this massive boa constrictor, I think, that they had cut the head off. It was this dangerous, deadly, and it was, I don't know, it was something like 25 feet or something massive and like super dangerous, but it would, I guess he said, so they would cut its head off and, but it's, it would thrash around in a very dangerous way because this is a very, very heavy snake. And it would be like, you got to stay far away for a few hours because this, it'll take, it's already dead, but its body doesn't know it's dead yet. So it's still, it's thrashing everywhere. And so people would keep their distance because for the next couple hours, it's going to do this, basically this, this death rattle, death shake, you know? I mean, it's kind of a grotesque image in some ways, but he kind of he sort of said, and he used that same image for, to describe the victory of Jesus kind of thing. It's like, yes, the death blow has been served, but we're still in the, in that death shake kind of period, whatever. Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there you go. And, so whatever image you use, it's hopefully that what the images that work are the one of full death. And I like that one because that snake is dead.
Yes. For sure. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So just really quickly here, one of the things that I found, and I said this on Sunday, but I wanted to hear your thoughts on it. Just the difficulty. So when a Christian runs into difficulty, that often there's just, they think of themselves and God. And I'm saying this because I do this, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I've had chats with God about, like, my kids, right? Like, if one of my kids gets sick, like, I just really want to, I feel like I would just immediately blame God, you know? And maybe one day I find out God in his sovereignty allows, Corey's getting a call.
This is Ruby. I'm just going to hang on a second here.
Let's just answer it, and she can talk to us on the podcast.
It's too late. No, sorry, Ruby. I'll call you later. Hang on.
Your dad loves you.
Exactly. A podcast. You were on it. Okay, there we go. Sorry.
No. I guess I'm saying, like, when tragedy strikes, I know there are some Christians who would talk about, hey, God is sovereign. He's bringing this into your life.
Yes, right, yeah.
Every Christian has to obviously acknowledge that God allows it, right? Because God could stop the bridge from falling, but whatever. Yeah. Yeah. But does God actually will it? Mm-hmm. Is God willing this?
Yeah.
And that's then Christians would probably be divided on that.
Yes.
But we all believe he's sovereign still, in control. But I think I'm naturally going to be angry at God. Like, I feel like if I know Matthew, I'm just like, oh, I'll be upset, right? And because I think it's just me and God.
Right.
And then when I was preparing for the series, I thought, because I had had a couple meetings where I was just like thinking about that with people who are going through tragedy. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, it's so funny how we, I think, at least my experience here at North Langley or in the West or in my upbringing, is that we only think about us and God constantly when tragedy hits. Mm-hmm. I never think of evil or of Satan. Mm-hmm. And then when I went to John 10:10, it says the thief comes to steal, kill, and destroy. Right? But I've come that they may have life. So if I take Jesus seriously there's a thief who's coming to steal, kill, and destroy. So I feel like at minimum, when we think of discipleship, I should at least pause and go, hey, this might not be God.
right.
God is somehow allowing Satan to make one final destructive move. But if something is, let's say, steal, kill, and destroy, so if something's being stolen, killed, or destroyed, I should at least think about the potential that this might be the other guy. Mm-hmm, and I'm giving all credit to God for this terrible stuff that's going on in the world.
Yeah, right.
And I'm like, I guess I'm just trying to say play fair a bit here. Like, rather than imposing everything bad that happens on our life upon God, if I'm taking Jesus seriously, it seems like you might want to look over to the other guy,
right?
A third party. Last thing I'll say here, I'm not trying to make a big point about sovereignty of God or about how God works in the world. I'm just trying to say there's a third party.
Yes.
And according to Jesus, he's willing our destruction. So when crisis, bad things happen, I want to at least acknowledge he's there.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
That does make sense. Yeah. It's funny. I feel like if you want it to, it can open up a huge can of worms, right? Like if the hearing this, right? Because I'm like, yeah, you do think about things like, you know, hyper-Calvinism, let's say, you know, like predestination. And because it, I feel as though you can easily slip into, like, I remember, like, you know, the Indian Ocean tsunami back in, what was that, early 2000? You know, like terrible, hundreds of thousands of people killed. And I remember there were some preachers saying this was God's judgment, right?
Yeah.
And I would, not that I feel almost maybe not agnostic about it, but I'm like, I don't know I don't believe it was God's judgment at all. I don't believe that. But I might feel weird if someone was saying, oh, that's an attack of Satan. Because that feels also so specific and stark. But I feel like I would way rather lean over that way.
Natural disasters are tricky.
It's tricky.
Like, yeah. I'm saying, like, you're in a situation where your boss is, I don't know, I'm just making this up, but like, stealing from the company, mm-hmm. or you've been falsely blamed, yeah. or...
It's trying to be fun. Is that a bad joke? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
No, but you...
Yeah, totally.
You're going through this rough time at work, yes, where you're absolutely discouraged. Your boss is actually treating you really poorly. Mm-hmm. They're not actually kind to you at mm-hmm. work. And there's gossip at work.
Yeah.
And whatever. Now, add all that up. Okay, so your boss is like cheating on the company. They're gossiping about you. Mm-hmm. They're treating you poorly. And then we go home as Christians and we go, God, why are you putting me? Why do you have me in this job? Mm. Why are you doing this to me?
Right. Yeah.
And it just sounds like, hold on. You're talking about gossip? You're talking about like stealing? You're talking about lies and like this presence at work that is actually really actually awful mm-hmm. and kind of evil?
Yeah.
You know, maybe you should attribute that to the enemy. You know, because I think natural disasters are very tricky, I'm more talking about like kind of that like everyday kind of like, I don't know.
I know what you mean. Totally. It still feels, I know. And this is where I know we talked about this. Like, I feel like I just want to have so much humility in ascribing that. Cause part of me is, it's like, well, it sounds like your boss is just a jerk. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't know. We could say that's Satan, and maybe it's it's all of the above, you know? But right. It's like, because often I'm like, I feel like it also can be an easy scapegoat kind of thing too, right? To be like, oh, you know, I know.
The devil
I
shouldn't made have me do it.
Yeah, the devil made me do it, you know? And it's like, well, yeah, I mean, probably there was something, you know, if we believe that, if we take this seriously, then actually we would probably say that was one of the ingredients in this cake, you know? Yeah. But at the same time, there's also this element of human choice and brokenness, unfinishedness, whatever you want to say.
Totally.
You know what I mean? Like,
Well, it's so weird, right? Because it seems like in the New Testament, you're still held accountable.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Even if you say, oh, the devil made me do it, quote mm-hmm. unquote, you're still held accountable. So it's not like you can say, "It," you know, the devil took over.
Yes, yeah.
And
yeah.
I blacked out, mm-hmm. maybe in like extreme forms of possession or something. But mm-hmm. like in normal everyday, you're still accountable for how you're behaving.
Yes, yeah.
And... Yeah,
it's tricky. I don't know if it's a good. I was just thinking about the I mentioned this to you, like, and I remember like just hearing about Heath Ledger, which we had talked a bit about, you know, and I just loved his act. He's such a good actor, and he's the guy. He was in he was the Joker in the second Batman series there by Christopher Nolan. Dark Knight.
Dark Knight.
You know, and I just remember, and again, this is not like I want to be careful how I say it, because I'm like, I don't I would never want to assume that I know the answer to this, but I do remember hearing that he. In studying to be the Joker, he won an Oscar after like post-mortem, right? Like which is very tragic, but he was brilliant in that movie. But I remember just reading that he exposed himself to such horrible video of like, you know, World War II images. Like just he basically sought out evil as much as he could in his hotel room or his apartment, wherever he was staying, in order to study for this part, because he really wanted to characterize the Joker well. He wanted to be as intuitively and as normally, quote unquote, evil as possible. Like he really wanted to embrace that. And so he really did. And I know that in the end, I think he died because of a deadly combination of medication. He was on like antidepressants and sleep medication. He had a whole bunch of different like anti-anxiety, like tons of this stuff that just, I think, ended up ended up ultimately killing him. I think he had, I don't know if he overdosed or if it was a,
oh, so tragic.
It was a bad, yeah, it was a bad concoction of all these things together. And supposedly, again, I remember reading that he, yeah, he wasn't sleeping at all. He was depressed. He was super anxious. He was just not doing well at all. And his friends were worried about him. I think his ex-wife was worried about him. Like he, so anyways, all that to say, I'm not saying that, so Satan did that, you know, but I am saying there is something to this idea that when you invite evil in and when you almost partner with it, in a sense, it's like you are playing with fire. Maybe I'm jumping ahead a little bit.
No, that's okay. Yeah. That's actually the image on Sunday. I was just trying to say the keys to your house, or you've opened up your,
yes, right.
Your,
yeah,
house.
Yeah.
Do you know an authority, yeah, like you've, which is always dangerous.
Yes.
I,
yeah,
think.
Yeah. It just, yeah, feels very tragic, very sad. Yeah.
Hey, you had, I'm just going off script here a little bit, but you had just a question about that on Sunday. Just about the sermon.
Yeah.
But just about, I had a section where I was talking about some of those things like Ouija board,
tarot cards,
palm,
yeah, yeah,
reading, all that stuff.
Yeah, horoscopes,
and,
yeah, astrology.
And you were, you had a question about that. We had a chat yesterday. Did you want
to? Yeah, I remember, you might have to remind me what I said, but I remember, I think what I always get a little bit uncomfortable when we say things. I know you didn't, this is probably exaggerating it, but when we say things so matter-of-factly, like, you know, these things are all in the axis of evil. These are all, like, you know, so Ouija boards, horoscope, and I'm not, by the way, just so we're clear, like, I'm not interested in playing with Ouija boards at all. But I remember growing up in that environment, I'd go to parties in high school, especially, and stuff, and there was lots of that happening, and it was all, but I was kind of like, when I look back on it, I'm like, yeah, you know, it's not great. It didn't have the same, like, when I look back on it, it's hard for me to be like, oh, these kids were like, they were inviting evil into their hearts. It's more like, oh, these kids are like, the same reason we watch horror movies, because we like to be scared. We like scary stuff, and we like, you know, so again, I'm not in any way defending Ouija boards or horoscopes or astrology, all that kind of stuff. It's more, I just want to be, again, it's that humility that I feel like I want to have when I'm like, I don't know exactly how that works, but I believe, again, that it's important that we are mindful of what we are inviting in. I really do believe that I feel very strongly about into our being, into our system, our humanity, you know, like ourselves. So I'm like, yeah, I wouldn't, even now today, right? It's funny how there's often, I feel like people in their late 40s are often living out what they didn't live out in their late teens, you know, like I have some friends that are like that. I'm like, oh, wow. Okay. Mm-hmm. You're partying now, 'cause you didn't party when, you know, whatever. So, but I'm like, if I found out there was some big party, it's like, oh yeah, we're going to have like Ouija boards. Not because I'm a pastor or because it'd be more like, I'm just not really interested in, I don't really understand how, maybe it's just a gimmicky thing that someone's making money off of, these Ouija boards. But I'm like, I would rather just not do that. To me, that feels different than saying these are evil. Absolutely. Like, there's no question that these are evil. And it just feels very, I don't know. Yeah. Very, that certainty language. I think I'm always a little bit uncomfortable with that. Mm-hmm. Is that what we were talking about?
Yeah, it is. It is. Yeah. And I think this is where, like, the Corey Matthew tension.
Yes.
Like, 'cause I feel like I would say that I also grew up in a time where it was like lots of things were called evil. Mm-hmm. My parents actually didn't call like movies evil,
or rock
music evil, or,
yeah,
dancing evil. Like my parents didn't like dancing, rock music, and movies. My parents were okay with those things.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew others who weren't that way.
Right.
Like my buddy's dad never let him watch a movie or whatever. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I get that. And so like, I feel like, but for me personally, I would say the Ouija board is in a different category,
because
mm-hmm. I would say it's not like the movie or the rock that you had to like, you know, it's like, well, the beat of the drums is the rhythm of like satanic rituals,
yes,
or something,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
that. And it was, mm-hmm, like, that's kind of obscure.
If,
like,
you play the tape backwards, it says, you know, all this language about for Satan or something. I don't know if you heard
right.
that. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. And I'm like, well, what about the church orchestra? Like those drums, like he's over there giving it on the, you know, on the timpani or on the whatever. It's like,
yes,
are
yeah.
those beats?
Yeah,
satanic?
Yeah,
I didn't,
yeah.
I never understood that logic.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, a Ouija board is different because you're trying to communicate with the dead mm-hmm. or with, you're trying to, like a medium, like what you're trying to do is you're trying to connect with a spiritual being or someone who is deceased, and you've opened up a door, and you really don't know who's on the other end of that door. Mm-hmm. So I would be like, stay away from it for mm-hmm. sure. And I think I use the image of, imagine you're in a little cabin in the woods and there are wolves outside mm-hmm. and you were going to cook dinner with this amazing aroma.
Yeah.
You're cooking ground beef,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And you thought, I'm just going to leave the door open, mm-hmm. you know, all evening.
Right. Yeah.
And it's like, you are asking, like, if you leave a door open, you're asking for, you have the potential. You might, you know, not have anything happen, but you might actually encounter a wolf.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
Because you're opening up. Right. Your life to something very dangerous.
Totally. Yep. It has so much to do with, I think, the way it's presented. I think maybe part of it is, like, for me, it's reactionary to, you know, just, you just hear so many, you know, on TV, like preachers that'll be like, you know, this is evil, that's evil. This is okay here. That's evil. This is, you know, here's from the expert. And this is not you, of course, but, like, you know, from the expert behind the pulpit, who's going to explain to us all these things here. This is evil. This is evil. This is evil. This is okay, but that's evil. You know, and this, like, here's the categories. And I think that's where I'm missing the humility of saying, we actually just don't understand a lot of this at all. And I think that's a good reason on its own to say, hey, if you're seeking out something that is dark and something that is potentially evil, that you don't see, it's probably far better to stay away and to not do that, to not open the door. You
sure.
know? If you know there are wolves out there. Now,
I would increase it a little bit, though. Like, yeah. I would say, like, talking to the dead, you think it might be your grandma.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, what if it's not your grandma?
Right.
And sorry, really quick, like, with the way that the spiritual world worked,
mm-hmm.
I was going to say a few things for this podcast, but I'll save it for another one.
Okay.
But just, I wanted to talk about, like, the way the biblical writers understood the spiritual world,
mm-hmm.
that there were these spiritual beings that, that some work for God. They're his heavenly staff team. So Michael, Gabriel, angels, cherubim, seraphim, they're all part of God's heavenly staff team.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a whole bunch of other, the Bible calls them lowercase g gods, right?
Mm-hmm.
Elohim is the word, right? And these spiritual beings, these spiritual gods are actually moving against God and
right.
his will. So when you start to dabble in the spiritual, you don't know if you're talking to your grandma or who are you talking to? Like, mm-hmm. are you talking to a spiritual being that actually wills your
destruction?
Yeah.
But
do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Okay. But devil's advocate,
devil's advocate.
Oh, shoot.
Seriously, Corey,
yeah,
seriously on this podcast,
this is a mistake. This whole thing was a mistake. Couldn't someone who is, let's say, who's not yet a Christian, couldn't they accuse Matthew, you of doing the exact same thing? It's like, well, you're so sure. I think I'm talking to my grandma. Well, you think you're talking to Jesus. We're both doing the same thing. Now, you think, you know, you obviously would say Jesus is not your grandma. It's not the same thing. But you're talking to the unseen. You are communicating with the spiritual realm.
Yeah.
I'm doing the same thing, and I'm assuming that it's my dead grandfather or dead grandmother. Why is it okay for you, Matthew, to speak to the unknown and the invisible in the spiritual realm, right? But I can't because it might be evil.
I would kindly say, because the same authority from the Bible, right,
mm-hmm.
that I'm using to believe even in a demonic realm is actually the same authority that is telling me to be filled with the Holy Spirit, that the Spirit fills my life. So that is a spirit, but he wills my good. So I'm saying they go together.
Right.
Right. So if you don't believe in God, or you don't believe in the demonic, it doesn't matter either way to you.
Right.
In terms of, like, your belief system,
mm-hmm.
but you could very well be opening up your life to something dark.
Yeah.
And I would say, well, if you're encountering darkness and dark evil spirits, then I'd love to tell you about one who can, like, conquer that evil spirit. But I guess I would say we're trusting, to answer your question, the worldview of Jesus.
Yes.
Is what I'm saying. I'm trusting the worldview of Jesus. So he seems to suggest, or mm-hmm. we see in his life, that there are these dark spirits that will my destruction. And he has said to pray to the Father, right?
Yeah.
And and we see the apostles talk about being filled with the Spirit, and Jesus said that he had this living water to give us, right? And he breathes on his disciples and says, receive the Spirit. Mm-hmm. So it seems like the only Spirit we're supposed to receive or communicate to is God himself.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
So yeah, at the end of the day, it comes back to, we do believe Jesus is the smartest man who ever lived, and
yes.
we are putting our faith in what we read about him in the scriptures.
Yeah.
That, at the end of the day, that's kind of the answer, right? Because again, I think we actually have to settle there probably at the end of the day with someone, because 100%. You're like, we have to acknowledge, say, yep, I understand your pushback. If you don't believe what I believe, I get that this might feel, because again, they could be like, well, I want something positive too. I'm not looking for darkness. I don't want dark spirits. Because a lot of people aren't either or. In fact, I just wonder how many of us are actually atheists. You know what I mean? Like, I really do wonder that.
Right.
Who's actually an atheist? But whatever. Most people are probably more like, I don't know. I think there's God, I think, probably. And
yeah.
And maybe there's dark forces. I don't really know, you know. But that's who I'm talking about. Someone that might be like, but I do know, you know, I have a friend who spoke with his mom who passed away, came and talked, you know, whatever, that kind of thing. And it was a positive, really beautiful, positive experience. I can imagine that person pushing back and saying, well, okay, so,
yeah.
And I think we have to, at the end of the day, say, yeah, I understand, I get it, but this is my worldview. Actually, I really am putting my faith in Jesus, and here's why, you know, let me tell you a little bit about my journey and my story, and, you know,
yeah,
that's all. Anyways. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. For those kind of interesting stories where you really felt like you were talking to your grandma.
Yeah. I remember go ahead.
Oh no, I would just say, like, I don't know about any of that.
Yeah.
What I do know is, I guess the question I would ask is, would there be an enemy who would want you to become so dependent on that communication, right? That you're not actually talking to your grandma, that this is a way to be pulled into a world that is not healthy, you know, mm-hmm. to rely on it. But I don't know. I could see that being very appealing,
mm-hmm.
And finding a false, Well, a comfort in real life. It's like, oh, I talked to my grandma who died, right?
Yeah.
But the truth is that if I'm going to go with Jesus and how he viewed the world, then I'm going to stay away from that, because actually that could be something that's not willing my good.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just want to avoid it. And I'll just want to end the podcast with this idea.
Okay.
The idea is, I would say to anyone who's new to Jesus, because I was chatting with a friend who's new to Jesus, mm-hmm. and they said, I think this is going to be a hard series for me.
Mm.
I would say, start with Jesus, right?
Right.
We don't start with the demonic. We don't start with, like, even like talking about sexuality, like LGBTQ stuff. Someone is like, ah, I don't like those teachings. I'm like, don't start there. Start with Jesus.
Yes.
We always start with Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah.
Come to know him, love him, trust him, and then slowly try to see how he viewed the world.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So in the same way, I'd say, trust how Jesus saw marriage and gender. Just try. Mm-hmm. Like, you may not like it initially, but if you love him, try to see the lens that he saw these things in. Do the same with the spiritual world.
Mm.
Like, you may not like this instantly, but if you trust Jesus through that lens, just go, okay, well, then I'm going to trust how he saw the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe I'll avoid the Ouija board, or maybe I'll avoid the horoscopes or whatever it is, because I don't want to dabble in that. I want him. He said he'd fill me with the Holy Spirit. That's all I need.
Yeah.
And I want him.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
I was just gonna say I wanted to do this little thing where I just recommend a few books. Like, mm-hmm. just if anyone's interested in the things I'm reading Sam Storms. He's a pastor actually from Oklahoma, but he's a great theologian pastor, and he wrote a book called Understanding Spiritual Warfare. It's a thicker book. Also Mike Heiser, he wrote a book called The Unseen Realm, mm-hmm. which gives a great background to the biblical worldview of spiritual beings. There's also a great series on the Bible Project that you can watch in under 30 minutes,
but
it's seven different videos called Spiritual Beings. Mm. It's a spiritual beings series.
Yep.
That would help anyone get a great background to, like, a biblical view of spiritual beings. And then the last two, John Mark Comer, he used to be a pastor. Now he's, I think, like a professional speaker, author.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
But he wrote a book called Live No Lies.
Yeah, right.
focusing on the lies of the enemy. And then finally, just Lewis's Screwtape Letters. I'm just enjoying reading that.
So
and,
good.
It's funny. I had never read it before. So I've been reading it. And so it's very interesting. But
I don't think I've read all. Like I've read, it's one of those books you can actually read like four pages at a time, right? Because it's like these different letters back and forth kind of thing.
Yes.
It was supposed to be made into a movie. Steve Taylor, you know Steve Taylor? He had, apparently has been working on it for years. But it's been a few years since I've heard anything about it. I think it just hasn't happened. But he wanted to make it into a movie. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. It's such a great, witty. It's a very insightful book. Because he talks about, there's lots of the strategy, right? So it's like, don't alarm your patient. He always calls, or your client or your patient, whatever. Don't like the person that this demon is kind of pursuing or whatever. He's like, instead, you know, encourage him to go to church. Tell him to go to church. But then, you know, heighten his annoyance at the that one lady that chews too loud.
Yes. And, you know, I just read that one.
Yeah.
read that one because he says like, he's like, unfortunately, Wormwood, your person that you know, or tracking or whatever has just become a Christian. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's terrible. But now what you got to do is when they go to church, it was this whole thing about going to church.
Yeah.
He was like, they're going to come excited. And the best thing to do is not to like disturb them too much because then they'll notice something's up or something like that.
They'll be alarmed or
But he's like, notice that his neighbor is there. Who he has been annoyed with.
Yes.
And notice that it's like all these like
and
little
he's like
tiny.
Worshiping. Yeah, exactly. Find ways of making him a little cynical, just a little bit of cynicism. Yeah.
Interesting.
So good. Yeah.
Hey, final thing I'll say, I really want this series to be filled with hope and freedom and victory. So I'm trying to make it my commitment that this is not some kind of like thing for 7 weeks where we're just going to be talking about demons and the devil, you know, just like in a kind of a hopeless way.
Yes.
That actually I want it just to be filled with lots of joy that that he really is a defeated foe, that he's in checkmate. And that we can actually walk in lots of freedom. So
cool, man. Yeah. It's going to be good. It'll be adventuresome. I'm looking forward to this coming Sunday. We're doing Battle Belongs this Sunday. I know you had said that. It's a good one. That good song that kind of speaks about some of the stuff. So cool. Thanks, Matthew. This is good.
Thank you.
Anything else we need to say?
No.
No. Okay.
Are we good?
I think we're good.
Are we angry at each other?
I don't think we are.
No?
Oh, hang on. Let me just... Yeah, actually, there's something there. No. No way. Never. okay. Thanks, North Langley. We're going to see you on Sunday.
That's right. Bye, everybody.
Have a great week. See ya.